Hello, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and today is Thursday, April the 2nd of 2026. We're going to go ahead and start off with part one of the pantograph. We'll start out with making meals into moments. Ever-changing menu keeps a buttery fresh experience. By Olivia Jacobs, 2 hours ago. Eats of the Week. The pantograph each week profiles a different bar or restaurant, from new to old favorites. Which one should we feature next? You can email ojacobs@pantograph.com and check out our previous entries at pantograph.com. Eats of the Week, Lincoln. Best friends Nicole Cox and Amanda Kitterman opened The Buttery to sell their homemade goodies in Lincoln in December, but they never thought they would have their own brick-and-mortar shop. The Buttery, at 1503 North Kickapoo Street in Lincoln, offers an ever-changing menu of breads, pastries, soups, and salads with a focus on fresh seasonal ingredients as a grab-and-go store. The store come about because of a customer demand, they said. It's all about making every meal into a moment, not just the food that we prepare, but also the food we choose to carry into the shop, like other elements, the retail products, Cox said. We're always sourcing things that you can use at home to cook or to sell. We sell a little salt slides that you can carry in your purse. The idea is that you can take them and turn your meal into a moment, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I needed lemon zest salt, but I did. The concept for The Buttery began in August of 2024 with the idea of a farm stand type business to sell items they baked in their homes and under cottage food licenses. The Rolling Buttery was born using a rolling cart named Birdie. When the winter months rolled around, they still wanted to keep businesses going. Cox's husband built a greenhouse for them to sell the products out of, and they ended up having lines of cars waiting. Then, they were able to expand into a commercial kitchen at the Hope on Fifth homeless shelter, but changing health department requirements led them to purchasing what is now The Buttery. The Buttery, where 1503 North Kickapoo Street in Lincoln. Hours, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., Tuesday through Friday. You can contact at 708-374-7070 or Nicole at thebuttery.com. And Nicole at the, there's a hyphen in between, buttery.com. Online, facebook.com/thebutterylincoln. We're kind of pushed into a little getting into a brick and mortar, maybe sooner than we would have naturally, Cox said. But we also didn't want to lose our customer base, so we took the dive. But it's literally been great. We've just been open since December, and continually our sales are consistent. Square, a restaurant ordering app, is great, and it gives you a little highlight of whether a customer was new or returning, and so we're constantly seeing new customers come in, and it has been really great, she added. I think people just really enjoy having the option of something a little healthier that's quick, grab and go. Not like I go to a restaurant and I've got to sit down, I've got to wait for my food. It's already here for you. Cox is from Chicago, but moved to Lincoln for college. She previously worked as a kitchen manager and catering coordinator for Sodexo at Lincoln Christian University and also started the Lincoln Memorial Hospital Farmers Market. Kitterman is a Lincoln native and was a stay-at-home mom to four. With her oldest heading to college and the youngest in grade school, she said she was ready to re-enter the workforce. The name, quote-unquote, buttery, comes from the term of a monastery room that was used to store food to offer to travelers and strangers. The duo said they wanted their business to be a place where community members stop on their daily journeys, and the name reflects that. Cox and Kitterman aren't vegetarian, but cottage food license restrictions make it easier to serve vegetarian and vegan items. They do serve meat, but they have found that their meatless items are more popular. I think we just try to do everything from scratch. We're constantly, you know, we're making all of our own bread. We're making all of our own salad dressings. Yeah, we try to do everything from scratch, Cox said. We always look for the best produce, unique items we can add to salads and soups. Our business model is very different from restaurants in that our menu changes weekly. If you came in this week and got the Ruby sandwich, you will not see it here next week. You know, it might be a while before we have it again, so it's just always evolving. This week's menu includes various bakery items, such as Vicari Sokupan Japanese milk bread loaves, sourdough bagels and loaves, fascia and cinnamon rolls, olive oil cake, carrot cake slices, raspberry lemon blondies, fresh fruit tarts, mini whipped peanut butter pies, malted chocolate Easter egg cookies, lemon meringue pie cookies, cashew butter cookies, lemon poppy seed protein bites, and Snicker protein bites. Drink items include Robin Eggs coconut cold brew latte, carrot cake cold brew, and a blueberry hibiscus lemonade. Prepared food items include a carrot lox bagel sandwich, Easter breakfast sandwich, spring meadow grain bowl, lemon roasted veggie grain bowl, beetroot mash, citrus miso ginger carrot salad, and a banh mi sandwich. Available grocery store items will be in the gourmet deviled eggs, radish chive butter, and demi baguette, Sokupan French toast casserole, and yogurt parfait. All items included are subject to change based on ingredient availabilities. Some of the elements of what we do, like with our cinnamon rolls, we figure out how to theme them, so things are consistent, Kitterman said. Nothing she loves more than being creative in the kitchen. We try to hit certain categories so that we'll always have grain bowls, we always have soups and salads, pastries and breads. So those things do stay the same, but all the flavors change based on what we can find or what we want to eat, Kitterman added. The Buttery's prepared food items are its best sellers, as well as grain bowls and soups. The store is completely self-service, so customers could come in and get the items they want, check out at the kiosk, and go on about their day. Cox and Kitterman also recently started a subscription service for Lincoln residents called Salad Club, offering a chance for people to receive 3 to 4 salads a week with a menu for the entire month. Subscribers pick up their salads on a Monday and have them for the whole week. This has been very popular, the owner said. Each Thursday, Cox and Kitterman sit down to come up with a menu for the following week. They post the weekly menu on Sunday via Facebook, and on Monday, they make and package everything and post what specifically will be available the next day. They are open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Fridays. Additionally, there is a notepad in the store where customers can request specific items. There are also a few tables and chairs for those who want to sit inside, enjoy their food and drinks if they would like. Cox said she is always shocked by new customers who can't believe that there's an option like the Buttery in Lincoln. You can contact Olivia Jacobs at 309-820-3352, or you can follow Olivia on Twitter at Olivia_Jacobs for more articles. In other news, we'll move on to political. Justice questioned Trump's order. The president attends oral arguments by Mark Sherman with the Associated Press 2 hours ago. And we have a picture of a lady dressed like the Statue of Liberty with a sign that says American-born children are American children. A demonstrator holds a sign Wednesday near the U.S. Supreme Court building as the court hears oral arguments on the legality of the Trump administration's efforts to limit birthright citizenship for the children of immigrants in Washington. Birthright citizenship. Washington. The Supreme Court took up one of the term's most consequential cases. President Donald Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship declaring that children born to parents who are in the United States illegally or temporarily are not American citizens, and he was in the courtroom on Wednesday for some of these arguments. The justices heard Trump's appeal of a lower court ruling from New Hampshire that struck down the citizenship restrictions, one of several courts that have blocked them. They haven't taken effect anywhere in the country. Trump is the first sitting president to attend oral arguments at the nation's highest court. He spent just over an hour inside the courtroom hearing arguments by the government's lawyer, Solicitor General D. John Saar. He left shortly after Saar wrapped up the wrapped up, excuse me, and the plaintiff was invited to present her case. The case frames another test of President Trump's assertions of executive power that defy long-standing precedent for a court that largely rules in the president's favor, but with some notable exceptions that Trump responded to with starkly personal criticisms of the justices. A definitive ruling is expected by early summer. The Birthright Citizenship Order, which Trump signed the first day of his second term, is part of his Republican administration's broad immigration crackdown. Birthright citizenship is the first Trump immigration-related policy to reach the court for final ruling. The justices previously struck down global tariffs that Trump imposed under an emergency powers law that was never used that way. Trump reacted furiously to the late February tariffs decision, saying he was ashamed of the justices who ruled against him and calling them unpatriotic. He issued a preemptive broadside against the court on Sunday on his Truth Social platform. Birthright citizenship is not about rich people from China and the rest of the world who want their children and hundreds of thousands of more for pay to ridiculously become citizens of the United States of America. It is about the babies of slaves, the president wrote. Dumb judges and justices will not make a country great again. On December the 10th of 2025, Trump announced his long-promised gold card officially went on sale, offering legal status and an eventual pathway to U.S. citizenship for individuals paying $1 million and corporations ponying up twice that for foreign-born employees. Trump's order would upend the long-standing view of the Constitution's 14th Amendment, ratified in 1868, and federal law since 1940 confers citizenship on everyone born on American soil, with narrow exceptions for children of foreign diplomats and those born to foreign occupying force. The 14th Amendment was intended to ensure that black people, including former slaves, had citizenship through the Citizenship Clause that is written more broadly. All persons or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state of wherein they reside, it reads. In a series of decisions, the lower courts struck down the executive order as illegal, or likely so, under the Constitution and federal law. The decisions invoked High Court's 1898 ruling in Wong Kim Ark, which held the U.S.-born child of Chinese nationals was a citizen. The Trump administration argues that the common view of citizenship is wrong, asserting that children of non-citizens are quote-unquote subject to the jurisdiction of the United States and thereof are not entitled to citizenship. The court should use the case to set straight the long-enduring misconceptions about the Constitution's meaning, wrote Sauer, the Solicitor General. No court accepted that argument, and lawyers for pregnant women whose children would be affected by this order said that the Supreme Court should not be the first to do so. We have the President of the United States trying to radically reinterpret the definition of American citizenship, said Cecilia Wang, the American Civil Liberties Union legal director, facing off against Sauer at the Supreme Court. More than one quarter million of babies born in the United States each year would be affected by the executive orders, according to research done by Migration Policy Institute and Pennsylvania State's University Population Research Institute. While Trump largely focused on illegal immigration in his rhetoric and actions, the birthright citizens' restrictions would also apply to people who were legally in the United States, including students and applicants for green cards or permanent resident statuses. Moving on now to education news. West Teacher is a finalist for the Golden Apple by Olivia Jacobs 2 hours ago. Normal. Angie Codron, principal at Normal West High School, was named one of 7 finalists for the 2026 Golden Apple Award for Excellence in Leadership. Codron was picked from nearly 100 nominations for pre-K educators that was submitted this year. Codron is an Eastern Illinois University alumni with a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry Education and a Master's in Athletic Administration. She earned her doctorate in Educational Administration from the Illinois State University. She has also earned her Type 75, now known as a Professional Educator License and a Superintendent Certificates. At Normal West, she regularly meets with freshman mentoring groups and works with student leaders in the Advanced Mentoring Programs, PACK, or PAC Athletic Leadership Council, and the Paw Print Journalism, as well as the school's student podcast. She started at Normal West 20 years ago as a science teacher, assessment coach, and a basketball coach. She served for 7 years as associate principal and was named principal 3 years ago. Last summer, she was named the president of the Illinois Principals Association for the 2025 to 2026 academic year. Codron also serves as a district-level professional development leader. In that role, she designs and delivers training for more than 2,000 staff members a year. The winner of the 2026 Golden Apple Award for Excellence in Leadership will be announced during a banquet that is set for April the 18th. So how does it feel to be chosen as one of 7 2026 Golden Apple Award finalists for the Excellence in Leadership? It's an amazing honor, to be able to be recognized for doing something that I love to do at school and that I love to do coming in every day. The Golden Apple organization is prestigious and well known in the educational field, so to be able to be associated with what they stand for is an awesome opportunity in this school leadership journey. What does being a leader mean to you? She was asked. Part of being an effective school leader means setting up systems where others can lead. As a leader at a large high school, we cannot possibly be in every team meeting. So building team structures that can occur without us having to be in the room is essential in continuing to move Normal West forward in a way that supports what students and educators need and what is widely important for students to reach in achievement levels. What has been your proudest or most rewarding moment as an educator? When I became just the fourth principal of Normal West in our 31 years of existence, I didn't know the support I would receive from the three past principals, which was truly rewarding and unique. We go to breakfast together, they drop off encouraging notes and food for the staff and me, and there is an essential group text that is like no other for helping me to be able to lead this school, and that they only would understand. Through the connection with them, I am able to realize the legacy that is accepted to keep this role as principal, which is not taken lightly by me for what this means for every stakeholder in the Wildcat community. If you win the school project, who would you choose to support with the $5,000 prize? The atrium area has recently gained approval to be named after our first principal of Normal West, Dr. Jerry Crabtree. So we are in the process of upgrading the area, modernizing the furniture, adding in electrical connections, and building a historic showcase of traditions based on the pillars of which Normal West was originally built. The money will go towards this project, which is occurring in phases, with the first phase set to roll out for the 2026-2027 school year. What advice would you give to those that are currently in or entering the education field? I would give them the same advice that I live by, embedded in my own personal mission statement. This is a profession where you can, one, be the difference that people need when they need it the most. Two, influence other and leave things better than you found them. Three, never stop teaching and coaching. Even on the hardest days, knowing there are young people that need us brings a fulfillment of leadership that occurs in the education field that does not always occur in other places. In other news, we have a man accused of a home invasion by DJack Alkire 3 hours ago. Bloomington. A 35-year-old man has been detained and is facing home invasion charges. Ethan Tyus, most recently of Normal, is charged with home invasion, causing injury, which is a Class X felony, and several Class A misdemeanors, including 2 counts of resisting a peace officer, 2 counts of domestic battery, and 1 count of endangering a life or the health of a child. According to a probable cause statement, read by Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt, Tyus forced his way into a residence in the 600 block of Orlando Avenue in Normal on Sunday, March the 29th. Once inside, Tyus punched a woman in the face, forced her out of the apartment, and locked himself inside with her 5 children, the youngest only being 14 months old, Fitt said. When police arrived and attempted to get Tyus to leave the residence, he refused, saying, quote-unquote, "I don't give an expletive who it is," according to the probable cause statement. Officers broke through a sliding glass door at the rear of the residence, and the four older children escaped. However, Tyus took the baby and hid inside a different room, the prosecutor said. When the 2 officers attempted to get Tyus and put the child down, he laid on his back and started kicking at them, striking one in the chest, according to the probable cause statement. Eventually, the officers were able to secure the child and arrest Tyus. The baby was not harmed in this incident. Earlier in March, the woman had secured an emergency order of protection against Tyus. That order expired on March the 27th, but on that same day, Judge Sarah Duffy issued a plenary order of protection. Fitt and Tyus had not yet been served the plenary order because he was not present at Friday's hearing. Fitt filed a petition asking Judge Amy McFarland to deny Tyus's pretrial release and keep him in custody pending trial. Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace argued for his release. He said both incidents involved Tyus using alcohol and the defendant needs treatments and counseling. In arguing for Tyus' detention, Fitt and Tyus poses a threat. Fitt said Tyus poses a threat to safety of the woman whose home he is accused of invading. She is definitely the target of his frustration and rage, Fitt said. The prosecutor argued Tyus would not comply with court orders because, quote-unquote, he stated himself that he doesn't care about law enforcement's orders, so why would he comply with any court order? McFarland granted the state's request and ordered Tyus to be detained. He is also ordering him to have no contacts with the woman he is accused of hitting while this case is pending. She said by locking the children inside the residence, Tyus, quote-unquote, in essence, held them hostage in a volatile, tense situation, adding that the children were caught in the crosshairs of his actions. Tyus's arraignment is scheduled for 9 a.m. on April the 24th. If you want more information about this article or other articles, you can contact D. Jack Alkier at 309-820-3275, or you can catch him on Twitter at D_Jack_Alkier. In other news, Trump's markets influence fades. Analysis by Josh Boak and Fatima Hussein. Associated Press 3 hours ago. A television carries a speech by President Donald Trump on the floor at New York Stock Exchange on March the 2nd in New York. Washington. As the Iran war intensifies, President Donald Trump has prioritized efforts to calm the financial markets, trying to keep oil prices from exploding upward, stocks from cratering, and interest rates from surging. While the markets have flashed danger, Trump has been quick with a social media post or a remark to claim the war he launched last month could soon end. He's publicly declared that the markets are doing better than he expected, even with the S&P 500 stock index declining over the past 5 weeks and the global oil benchmark up roughly 60%. "I thought oil prices were going to go up higher than they are now," Trump said at a Friday investor summit. "And I thought that we would be seeing a bigger drop in stock. It hasn't been that bad." With the Iran war, the White House has largely refrained from messaging more aggressively to voters and the about the economic consequences, choosing instead to try to contain damage in the financial markets, which has swung wildly on the prospects of ceasefires or escalations in what has become a high-stakes guessing game about Trump's next moves. The Republican president showed the extremes of his messaging Monday before the U.S. stock market opened, writing in a social media post that the great progress has been achieved on peace talks with Iran, while also threatening civilian infrastructure, such as desalinization plants, if a deal wasn't reached shortly. The White House seeks the stock and energy and bond markets as a way to indirectly reach voters. Trump has staked his economic agenda on cheap prices at the pump, robust gains in 401k accounts, and cheaper mortgage rates. But that messaging appears to be wearing thin, as the president's various pronouncements has done very little to change the reality that a large chunk of the world's energy supply is stranded by the conflict. Just 38% of United States adults approve of how he's handling the economy, and only 35% support him on Iran, according to a March survey by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Gene Sperling, a top economic advisor in the Democratic Clinton, Obama, and Biden administrations, said voters can make a direct connection between prices at the pump and Trump's choice to attack Iran. He said it's quote-unquote simplistic jawboning to the markets is insufficient for a public that is stuck paying the price as gasoline soars past $4 a gallon nationwide. Most advisors would say the president has to speak directly to the American people and fully acknowledge the economic pain that his policy has so directly caused in just such a short amount of time, and make the case for why the national security concerns justify it, Sperling said. Instead, you have a strategy of not recognizing or even dismissing people's economic pain. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt on Monday called the oil price increase a quote-unquote short-term fluctuation. Trump's strategy of giving mixed messages has started to work against him, said Jeffrey Sonfeld, a professor at Yale University School of Management and the co-author of a new book, Trump's Ten Commandments, Strategic Lessons from the Trump Leadership Toolbox. The uncertainty is now soaring, Sonnenfeld said, as the messaging to calm markets with false reassurances is having diminishing credibility in financial markets. So too has Trump diminished public confidence. During a cabinet meeting last Thursday, he said Iran was begging for a deal even as he threatened further military actions, all while maintaining that any economic damage to the U.S. would reverse itself. On Friday, the stock markets closed. He extended his deadline for Iran to open the Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway for the flow of oil, saying he would hold off on bombing Iran's energy plants in the meantime. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said on Monday on Fox News Channel's Fox and Friends that Iran was letting some tankers through the Strait of Hormuz and that the market is well supplied because countries are releasing their strategic petroleum reserves and sanctions have been made and removed for Russian and Iranian oil that is already on tankers. We are seeing more and more ships go through on a daily basis as individual countries cut deals with Iranian regimes for the time being, Bessent said. But over time, the U.S. is going to retake control of the straits and there will be freedom of navigation, whether it is through U.S. escorts or multinational escort. Graham Steele, a Bannerian Treasury official, said that Trump's messaging techniques can work temporarily, but that they have diminishing returns over time, and if they're detached from actual policy and results, it won't help. We saw a lot of the volatile market reactions initially when he kept saying that these announcements, these things, and then walking them back, Steele said. The market reaction now is just steady trend upward in prices. He noted that markets are not responding to it in the same way anymore. Thank you for listening. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and this has been part one of the Pantograph. Until next time, friends, happy Easter, and enjoy this warm weather.